From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 19th day of March 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. We'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks over at the Andersons facility in Indiana at Logansport and take up the weather forecast with Drew Lerner, too. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And along the way, I'll tell you a bit more about PEDV and the kind of impact it's been having on slaughter plants across the nation. It all comes up during this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago at the CME Group for Wednesday afternoon. Nearby wheat futures led the numbers higher, up 23 and a quarter cents at $7.15 and three quarters in the May. July at $7.17 a bushel, up 21 and a half. And September wheat at $7.23 and three quarters, up 21. That for the soft red. The hard red July or harvest month at $7.83. up 23 and a half cents. May corn futures $4.87 and three quarters, a penny and a half higher. July at $4.92 and three quarters, a settlement up 1 3/4. September corn $4.90, a penny and a quarter higher. In December, the harvest month at $4.88 and three quarters, new crop up a penny. March contract at $4.96 and three quarters for next year, a settlement price up 1 as well. In May, 2015 corn at $5, 2 1/2 cents. up a penny. May soybeans at $14.31 and a quarter, up 13. July at $14.10 and three quarters, 15 cents higher. And August, $13.59, up 10 and three quarters. September soybeans, $12.55 and a half, up 9 cents. And November beans at $11.91, a settlement price there, up 6 1/2 cents for the new crop. January at $11.95 and a half, up 6 1/2. And March soybeans at $11.98 and three quarters, finished 6 and three quarters higher. Bean meal on the day at $4.62, up $6.20. Bean oil at $42.10, 17 cents lower. Live cattle futures at April, $1.46, 12 and a half, 42 and a half higher. June at $1.38, 27 and a half, down 7 and a half cents per 100 pounds. March feeder cattle, $1.74.40, up 27 and a half. And the April at $176.65, down 25 cents. Lean hogs at $124.15, up 92 and a half for the day. And the May at $126.90 for the lean hogs, a dime higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, $100.42 a barrel, up 72 cents. RBOB gasoline in the April at $2.87 and 2 tenths. That's the wholesale price, 3 cents higher, or rather lower, on the afternoon. Ethanol futures at $2.71 and a tenth, 14 and 2 tenths of a cent higher. And RBOB gasoline is now 17 and 2 tenths of a cent narrower in the spread to the wholesale price, or RBOB of ethanol at 16 and a tenth of a cent wide. That's the narrowest we've seen in a very, very long time. Natural gas at $4.48, up 2 4/10 of a cent, and diesel fuel at $2.90 and 4 tenths, a penny and a tenth lower. Gold futures at $1,341.30. Finish $17.70 lower on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from the National Weather Service for the afternoon. We'll see cloudy skies, a high of 46 degrees. It'll be breezy with a west wind at 22 to 24 miles an hour. However, there could be some fog and mist outside as well. Tonight, cloudy. During the early evening, gradual clearing, a low of 29. Again, breezy with a west wind at 15 to 20, gusting all the way to 29 after midnight. Sunny skies tomorrow on 54 degrees, and on Thursday, partly cloudy and a low of 38 for the evening. Friday, partly sunny skies, a high of 64 degrees. Friday night, a 30% chance of showers before 1 a.m., mostly cloudy and a low of 35. And Saturday during the day, mostly sunny skies and 47 degrees. Saturday night, cloudy and 25. Sunday, mostly sunny and just 38 degrees for the high. Sunday evening, partly cloudy and a low of 23. More on the weather forecast comes up at the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Let's check now on this Wednesday afternoon, the 19th day of March, the futures markets with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie.
Well, good afternoon, Tad.
Well, we have all kinds of interesting things happening in the marketplace. I think maybe I'd like to start with wheat and why it was leading futures higher today.
Well, I think the number one thing, there's a couple of things, of course, going on, but the main one was that the Russians went over and took the naval base over in Crimea, and that really makes the market nervous, just the tensions that are going on over there. Of course, along with that, you have to couple the fact that we have wheat that is actually coming out of dormancy. It's in the 70s out in Kansas and coming out in really dry conditions. So, you know, those two things really push this market. When, you know, we saw May, Chicago, and KC both today, first time we've been at these high levels since October of 2013. July new crop, Chicago, KC, first time since June of 2013, and July KC 15 actually put in a new contract high at 70.60, so it added 10 cents onto the old contract high. I went to a webinar this morning, Todd, on Ukraine that was put on by DTN, and it was extremely interesting. The fellow who put it on is based out of Kiev, and so he certainly has some pretty firsthand knowledge about what's going on. Said he didn't believe that there was no impact on exports so far due to the crisis. In fact, they shipped 700,000 metric tons of corn last week versus ours 976,000. So they are certainly actively going at it. Said primarily because of the devaluation in the currency. It's down about 20 or 25%. As an example, in 2002, we were up around 120, and when we dropped back to 90, that was a 25%, you know, that was a 42% drop, and we saw what happened to our exports. They're experiencing the same thing. The only thing that's changed, though, he said, was that Ukraine actually is going to export less wheat and more corn. That Kazakhstan is now selling a lot more wheat due to their currency devaluation and the freight rate going over to Russia. But he also explained that Ukraine produces 97% of their wheat acres are winter wheat acres, where if you look at Russia, only 49% are winter wheat acres and 51% are spring wheat. Kazakhstan, 98% spring wheat. So once the spring wheat needs are taken care of, I would imagine they'll come back to Ukraine again. But very, very tough forward marketing year for those guys because they had lousy crops last year in terms of cash returns, so they have less crop. He said we have to really be worried about what they're going to do in terms of planting. They'll probably use cheaper seed, less fertilizer. They just don't have the cash or the purchasing power. So the other big question is, will Crimea get planted?
So, and would be Crimea, would that be, did he say, would that be corn or would that be wheat? And if we're talking about wheat, it would be spring wheat. At this time, so
well, it would be corn.
It would be
more
corn
than anything else. Yes, and you know, the interesting part is Crimea really only represents about between 10 and 13% of the total exports that go out of the Ukraine.
Right. So since this is such a large exporting nation for corn on the world stage, mm-hmm. it's what, number three or four, if I
number
remember
three.
Correctly.
Yep.
This could have over time, meaning through the fall, winter months of 2014-15, a pretty substantial impact on what the U.S. marketplace might look like.
Now, there's no question about that, and I believe that that's what we're seeing built into this market right now. You know, the idea that unless tensions really reduce, and I think the bigger picture, when you look at the larger umbrella is, okay, if we've seen Russia make a move into Crimea, will they try and go somewhere else? You know, will they go into, further into Ukraine? What's going to happen? And so that's driving the market at the moment. We've seen plenty of buyers come in, and we certainly saw a lot today. So there's plenty of opportunity out here. And, you know, it's having somewhat of an impact on corn, too, although corn didn't do much today. Dones came out at 90.9 million acres for new crop corn. Can you imagine?
Yeah, I saw it.
Wow. I went, whoa.
That's
compared to 92. I had about a week ago, I wrote Dr. Good, and I asked him what kind of impact would $7 to $8 corn have on exports, and He said if you look at 14-15, it would probably be similar to 10-11, where we lost 146 million bushels in exports, or 11-12, where we lost 291 million bushels in exports. We know, you know, 11-12 being the higher price year. So it's rather interesting to see those numbers come out, and now whether or not it's going to be true. On the opposite side, ethanol ground 93.5 million bushels this week. We need to grind 98 just to get to the USDA's 5 billion bushel use. So you put that, and now let's add to that, a private firm, not Doan's, of course, came out and said that they think old crop corn is only worth 450 compared to 487, and new crop only 410 versus 488. Enough information there to confuse a person?
Right.
So what it says to me, Todd, is that, like we talk all the time, you have to be prepared for whatever the market's going to hand you. If you're making money at these numbers, you need to get puts in place, you need to do something. And you also need to be prepared to re-own corn if you've sold a lot, because things can change so rapidly in this marketplace. Now, look at beans. You saw the Doan's numbers on beans, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
83.6 million acres. I mean,
big,
that's
big.
Oh, that's 4.1 million acres more than the USDA. That is gigantic is what it is. And that same private firm said that $9 on new crop is where we should be at versus the 1190s, which is where we are right now. I think, you know, 9's pretty steep decline, but if we get 83.6 million acres, it most certainly could happen. I think the interesting part about the acreage report that we have at the end of the month is just 8 out of 20 years we are too high on bean acres. Excuse me, 12 out of 20 years we're too high in bean acres. And 12 out of 20 years, we are too low on corn acres. So ultimately, I think what that just says is weather drives everything.
Indeed, it does. Hey, I want to take some of these things up one at a time. Can we come back to the Crimea and then old crop corn in particular?
Mm-hmm.
Because there will be many that have a lot of old crop corn in their bins. And I told you, give me just a moment, I told you that I'd talk a little bit about an event I went to yesterday in the Agri Center. I'm going to take a moment here to do that. This was in Bloomington. If you've not been there to be trained, and you can get in to be trained to handle anhydrous ammonia, that through the Illinois Fertilizer and Chemical Association, or to handle grain in bins that might be in bad shape, it would be worthwhile to give them a call. And you can just call the Fertilizer Association. You're looking for the Illinois Agri Center. The Illinois Corn Growers is right next to it in that building. I went up and watched them do an entrapment yesterday and a rescue. And it was it's time consuming and eye-opening. I will try to get video of this up onto our website at willag.org. But it took about 40 minutes to just go through the process. It takes about 4 or 5 hours, actually, to do it if somebody's truly trapped in a grain bin. The point is, don't get trapped in the grain bin. Always make sure that you go in with somebody else there. It only takes about 4 or 5 seconds to get caught, about 25 seconds to go completely under. Make sure the augers are off if you go into the bin. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox. Now, let's go back to old crop corn. So the things that are happening in old crop corn right now, we have people that have a whole lot of corn in the bin here. We have the Crimea situation where many are looking at the ports thinking, what if Russia does something more with Ukraine? Will they block the ports that belong to Ukraine? What are the things that could push that marketplace, old crop corn, higher or lower, in your opinion?
Well, I think that, you know, you just hit, of course, on two of them right now when you were just talking about Crimea. I think the other one that you hit on, and we certainly heard a lot of it last night in Effingham, is corn that's not in good condition. You know, the problem that we had an elevator person with us, and the problem that they're experiencing is, you know, they own immense amounts of corn. They had put some corn into bins that were at moistures that were probably higher than they should have been, with the idea they could have blended it with dry corn. They can't take in any more corn, and so because they can't get trains to get rid of what they want. And so I think ultimately we heard nightmare stories about a farmer who put a large amount of corn in at 28% with the idea that he thought that he'd be able to put air on it and get it dried down and everything. So one of the things we heard last night was, if you have any corn that has high moisture, get it in a dryer and get it taken care of. Otherwise, it's just not going to be worth anything. And so I think that's another thing that can drive us to a higher level. I think the other thing would be, of course, if we see very low corn acres come in on this March report, you could see a strong reaction to that. The thing we have to keep in mind, Todd, at all times is that anytime you drive the price higher, there's always that reverse action that comes in at some point in time. And, you know, right after we finish this report at the end of the month, we head into the next supply-demand report. And so, you know, higher prices normally would lead to somewhat lower demand. Whether that's true or not and whether USDA would make those changes are different. But what we've been telling people is, you know, you can't count on the fact that Russia's going to go and do some more driving around in Ukraine or blocking things. You can't count on the fact that their USDA is going to be able to estimate how much bad crop is out here because they don't normally do that, and we're not about to tell them in most cases. And so you basically have to make sure that you've got yourself protected.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. She's right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Now here's Dave with the news.
In agricultural news, 68 members of Congress have signed a letter calling on the Obama administration to back off a plan to overhaul poultry inspection. The four-page letter cites a Government Accountability Office report that questioned the adequacy of the data USDA used to justify the rule. The lawmakers question whether the plan will actually reduce foodborne illnesses, as USDA claims, and fault USDA for not requiring system-wide testing for salmonella. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack continues to defend the proposed rule. Vilsack believes the current inspection program is outdated, having been established in 1950, and he argues that the Food Safety and Inspection Service had sufficient data to move forward. Under current rules, a federal inspector is required for every 35 birds that cross the slaughter line each minute. The draft regulation would require just one federal inspector on the line, with other inspection responsibilities falling to plant employees. At the same time, speeds would be allowed to increase so that as many as 175 birds could pass by every minute. The proposal is backed by the National Chicken Council. Australian Trade Minister Andrew Robb today says that Australia is nearing a free trade deal with Japan, adding that it could lessen Tokyo's resistance to a U.S.-led effort to lower tariff barriers across the Asian-Pacific region. Australia launched free trade negotiations with Japan in April of 2007. Japan has called for Australia to end its 5% tariff on automotive imports. For its part, Japan has agreed to reduce tariffs on Australian chilled beef, currently 38.5%, and on some dairy products. Australia's conservative government is also looking to reach a separate free trade agreement with China. The U.S. is leading efforts to establish the Trans-Pacific Partnership aimed at lowering tariffs, opening markets, and writing rules on intellectual property rights and government involvement in the private sector. The TPP, which would comprise 12 countries that account for 40% of global economic output, has been stalled by disagreements between the U.S. and Japan over tariffs, mainly in the agriculture and automotive sectors. New figures released today show that the Purdue University College of Agriculture received $9 million in scholarship support during the last fiscal year from alumni and other donors, about four times more than usual for a one-year period. Over the last 2 years, more than 100 endowed scholarships have been established for students enrolled in the PU College of Ag. A growing number of scholarships are for middle ground students who otherwise would not qualify for financial aid or an academic scholarship. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm Yule via Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up next, a bit of information provided to us by Michelle Rook at WNAX out of Yankton, South Dakota. She says tighter hog numbers due to porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, otherwise known as PEDV, is resulting in kill cuts at some of the nation's pork packing plants. She talked to Steve Meyer, an economist with Paragon Economics, who says slaughter has dropped the last 2 weeks, 6 to 7% below a year ago. That, of course, due to PEDV losses and is nearing just 2 million head. As a result, Meyer says many plants are not at capacity and are trying to manage their labor force.
We're into that time period now where the losses in North Carolina will be coming to market. And we understand, and I have it confirmed, that Smithfield will be idling one of their plants there each week for the foreseeable future, and that would be Clinton on 1 week and Tar Heel, the monster plant of 32,000 head a day, on the next week, and flip-flop those back and forth.
Meyer says while the impact won't be severe, he is expecting this trend to hit Midwest packing facilities by May or June.
As a rule, we're probably going to see virtually no Saturday operations and at least half to two-thirds of these plants idling 1 day a week, and that might move around some. One company won't be idle a plant this week, and they might have to next week just on availability.
This particular trend started already last November and December when Seaboard's facilities in Oklahoma stopped Saturday operations due to the lack of pigs associated with the virus.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
On this Wednesday afternoon, let's check now the cash grain market. Stephen Linnebauer is on the phone line. He's at the Anderson's Logansport facility in Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Stephen.
How you doing, Todd?
Well, I'm very, very well. Let's start off with a movement in your area. I suspect it has begun to slow down. Is that the case?
Oh, depends on. I mean, yesterday was a good day. I think it's highly dependent upon weather. We finally saw a little warmer temperatures where guys able to get to bins and feel comfortable that they, can get corn out of the bin number one. But now we're starting to see that thaw come in. Now road conditions become a concern, so I would say it kind of day to day. Today a little slower, but yesterday really good with the warmer weather.
What are they finding when they core them out? Anything bad?
We're seeing a little bit. As we had that harsh winter, we're starting to see just a little bit of damage just due to the fact that we're had some snow come in on certain bins. But for the most part, relatively good. Guys seem to be pleased.
What is the price you're offering that's causing them to make the movement in the market?
Oh, I mean, it's right now we're looking at about a 480 cash price at the close today, and certainly been very helpful with a rally market that's held on now for about 2 weeks.
Any ideas that this thing will go higher?
I would say there's going to be a lot of fluctuation from now and until when the projected start planning day is. I think we'll see ups and downs in the trade, and as long as guys are selling on a rally, it's a relatively good cash sale. But moving forward, no one really has a handle on when we're going to get those kernels in the ground, and I think the market trades that, delayed planning for sure.
And your actual cash bids for the day, please.
479 cash to Climbers, 469 nearby cash corn to Delphi, 1442 cash beans on the nearby, and 681 for new crop wheat.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
Stephen Linnebauer is with the Andersons. He's at the Logansport facility there in Indiana. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
It's Poultry Day. The origins for the day are obscure, but the intent is to celebrate chicken and turkey as well as eggs. The history of the chicken is long and complicated, but its domestication goes back to perhaps as early as 3000 BC in India. In Egypt, there is mention of chickens as early as the Second Dynasty. The chicken industry in the U.S. is dated to the late 1800s to early 1900s, when a few entrepreneurs began selling young chickens during the summer for meat as a sideline activity on their farms. But it was not until the 1950s that the commercial broiler industry began to boom with the introduction of vertical integration. On this day in agricultural history in 1861, the Elias Howe sewing machine patent was reissued. The machine produced 250 lock stitches a minute, more than the output of five hand sewers. Also instrumental during the period was the work of Isaac Singer, who invented the up-and-down motion mechanism, and Alan Wilson, who developed a rotary hook shuttle. After a long legal battle, the three pooled their patents into the sewing machine combination. In 1936, canned beer is sold to the public in Britain for the first time. And in 1942, Clinton Hart Merriam died. A biologist, he studied the effects of using birds to control agricultural pests. He also helped found the National Geographic Society and what is now known as the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City is on the phone line to take a weather forecast look at the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Let's start right here in the Midwest, Drew. Farmers are starting to get itchy and thinking about at least moving some old equipment around, but it's been awful cold. I suspect it's going to stay that way.
Yeah, you know, it's just not the best scenario playing out right now. We have three shots of cool air coming at the heart of the Midwest as we go forward through this next full week. The first one's going to be innocent. It's going across the region already today. It's not a big deal. We've got a little bit of shower activity occurring and some snow that'll occur across the Great Lakes region. But it's really the second and third waves of cold that'll be most significant. The second one arrives in the northwestern Corn Belt as we go into Friday morning, and there will be snow up there. Again, this will be the Dakotas and parts of Minnesota. The frontal boundary races across the Midwest and does so quickly that there's not much precipitation that comes with it. And that's probably the best news I can hand out. But the temperatures will be dropping precipitously across the region. As we get into the weekend coming up, we're going to see afternoon temperatures falling back to the teens and 20s across the northernmost parts of the Midwest. That'd be from the Dakotas over to parts of northern Michigan. The lower Midwest will probably see temperatures that'll be a little bit more 30s and 40s when the coldest air finally settles in, which will be probably Sunday. Certainly Saturday morning will be fairly nippy. And we'll probably see Saturday morning's temperatures still flirting with zero, for crying out loud, in the northernmost fringes of the Midwest. A lot of single digits and teens across the north, and then the southern areas will still be seeing temperatures more in the 20s and perhaps some 30s. But this is only the second of the three waves of cold. The third one shows up next week during the early to middle part of the week, and it just reinforces this whole scenario one more time. We're going to see freezes down into the Delta. We're going to see them in the Tennessee River Basin and parts of the interior southeast probably next week, Tuesday or Wednesday, maybe Thursday even. And so the cold is going to be anchored in the region. We'll see more of these teens and 20s across a large part of the Midwest for highs during the coldest period in the north. In the south, we'll probably still see some 30s and 40s. But this is supposed to be spring.
It's supposed to be spring starting tomorrow, at the noon hour, I think. So we're not going to warm up just yet. Tell me a little bit about South American weather, too, please.
Well, I think they are seeing at least some stability. Argentina is going to see some better weather. They've been really quite wet in recent weeks, a little bit too wet perhaps for some of their sunseed harvest, but most of the corn and soybeans have not been negatively impacted at this point. But they certainly need dry weather. They're going to see that actually over the next week. I don't think there's going to be much precipitation at all in Argentina. Temperatures will be seasonable, but they will be kind of nippy on Saturday morning. We're watching real closely, getting down a little bit closer to the frost range in some locations, but that is not in the official forecast, so don't run with that. But it will be cool in Argentina this weekend. It looks as though the Brazil situation is still one of which heavy rain has been plaguing some of the southern areas, and that continues today. Parts of Paraguay, Rio Grande do Sul, some neighboring areas in Paraná, and parts of Mato Grosso do Sul have all been either subjected to the heavy rains or will be in the next 24 hours. And then it looks as though the rest of Brazil will see showers and thunderstorms scattering around, but they won't be heavy, and we'll see a good mix of rain and sunshine. Most of the crops will continue doing well. And the harvest seems to be working along just fine in Brazil, even though it's been wet at times. So we don't have too many issues down there at the moment.
That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.